more. Baby, it's not mine. Not a chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are right smack dab in the middle of it. Right smack dab in the middle. We are right smack dab.
Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. That first hour was with Charlotte Littlefield out of Columbia, Missouri. And we went from Ferguson to the world. So it's going to be Ferguson and the world. And we got into some very interesting things. We touched on labor Zionism, Gaza, and a lot of other very, very important things about isms. And we got into discrimination on a very broad basis. And it was a very enlightening conversation. And Charlotte's going to be coming back regularly from now on and with us. But anyway, there's a lot going on out there in the world, and this Ebola thing has not subsided recently over in Liberia, in Monrovia, the city of Monrovia, named after Monroe. There was a raid that occurred over there, and the problem with this thing is that raid was on a Ebola observation center. And the people, I guess it's rumor mill over there sometimes, and it's very, very difficult to deal with some of these crowds. Anyway, this crowd ran in, and looters, they chanted as they stole the infected items from the health center, there's no Ebola in Liberia. There's no Ebola in Liberia, and stole all the personal items of the people that were suspected of having Ebola, and then went back to a part of Monrovia that consists of about 75,000 people, between 50 to 75,000. So the government put on a total quarantine of the whole area. And there was a commissioner that lived down in that area, and they let her out, okay? So that's what's going on there. Other news is in the CDC, Center for Disease Control. Bill Posey is pushing for the last 6 months for release of information about the connection of mumps, measles, and rubella shot to autism. And they're not giving him that information, and they're holding it back, and he's madder than a wet hen, and he's going to continue to go in there and try to secure that information. In the meantime, there's a whistleblower that may be coming out of the Center for Disease Control, and if that whistleblower comes out, he says he has information that will tie those shots, that mumps and measles and rubella shot, to autism. So that would be a really quite an expo thing to expose and to get some information on. So that's going on in the background of that. While Representative Posey from Florida, he represents one of the districts down there, is lobbying very hard to try to get the Center for Disease Control to release information that others would say, the whistleblower is saying, that would reveal the connection between that shot and the autism. We've got really so much going on out here now that it's amazing that we can handle all this information. The Ferguson, that was our first hour, And the first hour was about explaining a little bit. We didn't really get into it that much, but it was explaining what went on in Ferguson since August 9th, and it's pretty well calmed down now. It was very raucous there a few nights. They used tear gas. We think it's CS gas, which is very dangerous, especially for children. But it's pretty well calmed down there. They didn't release information which we believe, Charlotte and I believe, would have cooled it down appreciably earlier. But as a result, I think it was mismanaged myself. I mean, that it looks like to me that they should have released anything that they had there as quickly as possible to defuse that problem, that event. And people were really upset about that. This attack on our governor it has some very, very interesting aspects to it. Rick Perry, just days ago, was indicted a little further than that, but he turned himself in a day or two ago to the county courthouse and was booked in. And he was indicted by a grand jury that was convened here in Travis County. And it was for abuse of power and so on. One sentence carried 99 years. But he's also uncovering information that behind Perry's indictment, there were organizations that were funded by George Soros. And one of the particular members of the grand jury was an ardent Democrat that was actually actively registered as a delegate to the Democratic State Convention while this grand jury was being convened. So there's a lot of back, stabbing that looks like occurred on this particular indictment. And it was to take his presidential aspirations away and to ruin his day, basically. They're meeting up in Jackson Hole, and there's an annual meeting up there, and it has some of the biggest movers and shakers in the country, much less some international people come in. And they're talking about central bankers and easy money and so forth up there. We'll have more for you later this week. Earlier, I touched on Rick Perry's indictment. He's spinning it to his advantage. By the way, Holder did go up there. Eric Holder did go up to Ferguson. And I think he was on the positive side this time. He got and shook some hands and pressed some flesh. And it seemed to relieve what was going on. I don't think the Democrats wanted that thing to go any further. Once information came out about Michael Brown possibly, strong arm robbing, they called it, but could it be looked like shoplifting too? Some cigars in there before he was gunned down by that policeman, Darren, you know. So it was really just a tragic thing that happened. And we just don't want that to happen. You know, I mean, we just don't want it to happen at all. But the two sides here, I got to digging some information and some research and so forth, and just to look at what's going on. And the two sides are setting up the good old white redneck boys against the blacks. And the blacks are being portrayed as the guys that are always in jail, that can't stay out of jail, that are not there 50%, are not there with their families. They just have children, but they don't take responsibility of the family. So, and there's a lot of blacks in prison today. So all those things taken together have demonized some of these blacks. And so a lot of policemen, they just stop them and stop and frisk and hassle them. Who are they? What are they doing there? And things like that. Well, out of some of that has become some very, very big conflicts. And there have been deaths. There have been some blacks that were just gunned down. I mean, for no good reason. And the policemen are out there. They're under pressure. They're authoritarian types of personalities. When they break down, they break down on the violent side. That's what authoritarian personalities do. It's the type of person that is attracted to police work or military work. And they're called authoritarian personality types. And when they're put under stress, they react in a violent way. And so that's what is happening that I can see out there on the beat. And the policemen don't have an easy go. They have a hard go of it. And what's really setting up the policemen, and let me just speak to this a few minutes here, is that the 9/11, ever since 9/11 occurred, there's been a conditioning process, not only in the police forces throughout the country, but the military has been conditioned to heighten their fears about terrorism. And these people are out there and they're hiding behind every tree, and you've got to know what everyone is doing and quiz them and just rake them over the coals. But it's very, very aggressive police actions and policing that they have cultivated and conditioned these people into. They have the law enforcement online they're networking with. They have all of these fusion centers. And with all that, plus having to combat your petty criminals out here, and some can be very dangerous at times. We've got a spillover here coming in from the border now. We've got this illegal immigrant thing that's wide open. And that's a mistake that the Obama administration is making big time. Now, on top of that, we have this ISIS rearing its ugly head, and people are contemplating or speculating, well, did any of the ISIS people come in with this influx? Or have they recruited some of these Mexican Americans, so-called, or these illegal immigrants, to work with them? I don't think the propensity for the average immigrant to go over to ISIS is very great. They want to come to America, most of them. They want a safer place to live. They want a job where they can at least make a living and eat better than they are in Mexico or those Central American countries like Guatemala and Honduras and so forth. The MS-13 has gotten really bad down there, so they do have a big problem. But they've got to confront it sooner or later within their own countries. They can come up here for a while and seek protection and sanctuary and stuff like that. But in the end, they're going to have to go back and deal with the drug cartels and those drug gangs down there themselves to straighten out their own countries. This is where in Mexico a year or so ago, I started telling the Mexican people, go get arms and take care of your families. And that's important. And I still give that same advice to the Mexicans in Mexico. Those militia formations of those militias down there was one of the best things that I ever saw Mexicans in Mexico do. Because they really understand this thing and this drug cartels down there are still threatening and very dangerous. And the only thing that they understand is force. So if you're not armed, they're going to push you around and kill you and string you up and do whatever they want to your family. So Mexicanos de Mexico, go out and get those guns and protect your families and take care and ward off those drug cartels down there. We have a China that is getting more and more aggressive. Okay, they're beginning to fly closer to us when we have these surveillance kind of craft flying along the coast of China. They're becoming a look up there and getting close to us. And in some cases, they can come up pretty and very, very dangerous, very close by sometimes. But so don't expect them to go away, that's for sure. The Royal African Company, let's talk about that. That's a company out of Great Britain. The Royal African Company was a mercantile company set up by the Stuart family and London merchants to trade along the west coast of Africa. It was led by James, Duke of York, Charles II, brother. Its original purpose was to exploit the gold fields up the Gambia River, identified by Prince Rupert during the interregnum, and it was set up once Charles II gained the English throne in the Restoration, 1660. However, it was soon engaged in the slave trade as well as with other commodities. So the Royal African Company was a British company that made a fortune shipping slaves into the New World, and that was not only the Caribbean and the colonies, but their primary market was Brazil, of all things. They had sugar cane farms down there, and so they shipped them in to grow sugar cane, and also they had sugar cane in those Caribbean countries also. So that's something to contemplate, and about 38% of all the slaves that were shipped from Africa to the New World wound up in Brazil. So that's why Brazil today has a large black population, but they've mixed in now with other ethnic groups down there, so they're not just all black and so forth. But that is an important, information to have, because they ended up, you know, just doing what they want. You know, I mean, here we go again. A thing that I did learn, and I brought this up the first hour, but in case you missed it, I was looking at cotton, and cotton was a very valuable commodity before the Civil War and after the Civil War. So the South, the Confederacy, was trying to use it to secure greater trading rights and so forth and materials, war materials, with Great Britain. And they finally did start giving them a rifle that was superior to what the North had at the time, even though the North did have a repeating rifle earlier on, and the Confederate boys were fighting with muskets. After the Civil War and the plantation, some of those in the South that grew cotton were abandoned. Others, the plantation owners, stayed there. The Northern government allowed some of these plantation people to stay and continue to grow cotton because it was such a valuable crop for the country as a whole. It was a very valuable commodity. Great Britain continued to need large amounts of it. And then they were textile plants and so forth, textile weaving manufacturing in Great Britain. And, of course, they created a lot of cloth that was imported into all over Europe. So that was a very, very important commodity for Great Britain to deal with during and after the Civil War. But after the Civil War, I was saying, it was important important note to take was that as some of these northern growers took over some of these southern plantations and started growing cotton, they would not let the former slaves off of those plantations without a special pass, PASS, like, sounds like something in the military or the army, you know. So the black former slaves that had worked on those plantations were not allowed to freely walk in and out of those plantations at will. They were still regulated and controlled with some kind of a pass, you know what I mean? So Charlotte and I were talking earlier on the first hour about this superiority type of mentality, see. And she'll come down on that secular side, and I'll come back and I'll say, oh, that's man trying to be God, you know. And that's really the problem, the age-old problem of men thinking themselves as gods and then trying to become godly through their, and they have these great aspirations of who they think they are. And they think that they're these great men of industry and great men of wealth, great man of whatever letters or whatever and so forth. So that's a bone that I've always had to pick with men, because men do not really understand. And this message, of course, goes out to my male listeners, but I know they don't like to hear it. But this ego state, especially when men start making a little bit of money, and they'll lose sight of who they are. And then with more money, they attract more women. And more and more women mean better and better looking ladies are looking or eyeing these rich guys to get something out of them. And so that's basically what goes on and on and on. So young rich men are very attractive to young, rich, beautiful, young, beautiful women. And it's always been that way and always will be. So the men are easily controlled by a beautiful woman. Just pat them on the head and give them a little sex and tell them what great geniuses they are and so forth, you know. That's the way it goes down. And men, they always go for it, you know. And they get a few whiskeys in there, in them, and some beautiful lady will strike their fancy. And before you know it, that woman's controlling them, say. Through, oh, you're just a great, you're such a genius, and you're just, boy, you're the smartest thing that's ever I've ever met. You're a genius man, and you have such great insights and so forth, you know. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And the poor guys there, they just get fleeced sometimes. They marry people, and women just divorce them after a few years and get as much money. That's this predator type thing now that's going on. But there are a lot of good women out there also that don't do that. But there are other women out there that are just in there for the gold digging, so to speak, and that's about all they've ever wanted. I want to thank you for listening. This next hour is coming up about small business, and that's one thing that Ferguson people could benefit from is to get in there and get some black people into small businesses. Thank you.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm sort of coming along with
Charlotte Littlefield.
Yeah, how you doing, Charlotte? Okay, this second hour is going to be excellent also, I believe. John Breeding was quite a man, isn't he?
I was going to say, you know, he ended on a good note with humor.
Yeah, right. And our next guest, let me tell you a little bit about Laura Chapman before I bring him on. For more than 20 years, Laura Chapman has worked to protect the interest of our nation's 27 million small businesses. In 2002, Mr. Chapman founded the Small Business League with a goal of stopping the diversion of federal small business contracts to large corporations. Mr. Chapman has been credited with prompting the first federal investigation and congressional hearing looking into the diversion of small business contracts to large corporations. During the last 7 years, Mr. Chapman and the ASBL have been instrumental in prompting the removal of 600 large firms from federal small business databases, more than 25 federal investigations, and nearly 1,000 stories in various media outlets across the nation. Welcome to our program, Laura Chapman. You've done a heck of a good job for the small business.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be with you.
Nice to meet you,
I'll tell you what, it's been a battle, hasn't it? How did you get started doing this anyway? What motivated you? I know you had some experience with Bob Bullock. Did that help a little bit in Texas or what?
It sure did. Mr. Bullock was a big inspiration to me, quite frankly. He changed my life working for him. And
right.
A lot of what I do, you know, I learned from him. And but he was tough, and you had to be tough, you know, to work for him. And it's tough taking on the government. And what got me started was about, I guess it was 2002. I was working at a computer company. I was a sales manager, and a young woman walked in my office one afternoon crying, and she spent a month working on a government contract that was supposed to be set aside strictly for small businesses. I think it was the Commerce Department. And she thought she had a real shot at it, and she lost it to a company in Amsterdam with 26,000 employees around the world in 28 countries. And I was kind of shocked at that, and I started looking into it, and I found within the next week, I guess, I found, I'll say, hundreds of the biggest companies in the world were listed in the Small Business Administration's database of small businesses, and that's how I got started doing it.
Right. You've had all kinds of lawsuits. I think you won, six lawsuits in the last few years? Tell us a little bit about those lawsuits.
I tell you what, I've won so many lawsuits, I've lost track. It's probably, I want to say, when you're suing the government, a lot of times, you know, I sue them under the Freedom of Information Act. So
yeah.
I ask for information that I know is damaging, that's going to show fraud, and I know they're not going to want to give it to me. And a lot of times, just before we actually file the lawsuit, they'll cave in. So I've probably won, I don't know, maybe 25 legal battles and maybe about, don't know, 15 of them went to court. And, but I've only lost one, and I've been doing it for 20 years. And, but it's really kind of actually funny, because they're so desperate to withhold this information. The things they tell the court are just laughable. The Small Business Administration told a federal judge about a year ago that they had no idea who got federal small business contracts.
Right.
And the judge came back and said, Judge Marilyn Patel said, it's curious the Small Business Administration claims not to have the very information they would need to carry out their mission. And she ruled in my favor, and I got the information. But it's funny. It's literally funny when you see what they say. Right now, the Office of Management Budget is telling me that they have no idea what the federal budget is.
My gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, it's funny. But they don't want you to see, you know, what's going on. They don't want you to know how much money they're spending. They don't want you to know who's getting the contracts and who's getting the money. And but it's very disappointing at one level to see the government, you know, try to withhold that information from people. And I guess the thing that shocked me the most is that this is the Justice Department that I'm up against, the Attorney General of the Justice Department, and they don't think twice about going into federal court and lying to the judge. It's just they don't think twice about it. And that always shocks me when I see that.
Right. I know Judicial Watch is trying to get a list of the, I believe, the visitor to the White House, and they're trying to get out of that right now. That's some of the latest news.
I'll tell you what, President Obama said he would have the most transparent administration in history. The Associated Press did a study about 6 months ago and found that it's actually the least transparent administration in U.S. history.
Right. And he created more debt than all the presidents previous. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll tell you something that now I'm embarrassed and ashamed of, but I endorsed President Obama. We worked with his campaign, and our main issue that we've worked on is to try to get the government to quit giving small business contracts to Fortune 500 firms. And he said he would stop it. And he issued a press release and talking about how great small businesses were. And it was February of 2008. And it ended with the sentence that said, it's time to end the diversion of federal small business contracts to corporate giants. And that was so important to me. Quite frankly, I would have endorsed anyone that would have promised to end that, you know, problem, because it's about, it's about over $1 million a minute when the government's open in federal small business contracts that are diverted to large corporations. But not only has he not kept that promise, but it's actually gotten worse under his administration.
Right. You've written an article recently that funding, honestly and with good money, in many of our small business communities could bring our economy out. What do you think about that? Is that what you're pushing now?
Absolutely. Something that shocks me is that when you watch television and read newspapers and just get news wherever you want to get it, they don't mention the fact that according to the U.S. Census Bureau, small businesses create over 90% of all net new jobs. Independent groups like the Kauffman Foundation have found that small businesses actually have created 100% of all net new jobs since 1980. And there's a federal law that says, you know, 23% of the contracts should go to small businesses. But when you really look at it, think of it this way. Small businesses create between 90 and 100% of the jobs, and the federal government gives around 95% of all federal spending to Fortune 1000 firms. And so Fortune 1000 firms have not created one net new job in America in 30 years, and they get 90% of all federal spending. So we're trying to turn that around. I had a bill introduced into Congress, I guess it was Thursday, the Fairness and Transparency in Contracting Act. And Congressman Hank Johnson introduced that. If that bill could be signed into law, it would inject more federal infrastructure spending into the middle class than anything that President Bush or President Obama ever proposed. But it's going to be an uphill battle to do that. But it's disappointing, you know. People don't understand, you know, when people are unhappy with the government, I always tell them it's much worse than you think it is.
Is it the level of corruption that the average citizen is not aware of?
Absolutely. In fact, here's a question I ask people. I was talking to a small business owner last night, a lady's name was Zoe, and we were talking about this. And she was talking about how hard it is to, you know, get her small business started. And you ask people, what percentage of campaign contribution and lobbying dollars come from Fortune 1000 firms? It's about 90%.
Then
you ask yourself,
we've got to take a break here. We'll be right back. We'll continue that thought in just about after the break. Thanks for being with us, Lori. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back with Lloyd Chapman, founder of the American Small Business League. Welcome back, sir.
So we were talking about, I guess, trying to create jobs and corruption in the government, and I want everyone to realize that small businesses create between 90 to 100% of all net new jobs, and yet the government's giving them virtually none of the stimulus money, and in reality, all current federal spending goes to Fortune 1000 firms, which haven't created one net new job, you know, in 30 years. It's crazy. It's just nuts. It doesn't make any sense at all, but
he was saying really something hard about contributions, political action committees,
yeah,
these super PACs and all that stuff. Is that what the corporations have been funding?
Yeah, absolutely. So we talked about the fact before the break that 90% of all political contributions and lobbying comes from Fortune 1000 firms. And then when you watch national television, ask yourself this question. What percentage of advertising on national television comes from Fortune 1000 corporations? It's 100%. And they just have so much power with the media and with Congress. And to try to get legislation passed to take money away from the Fortune 1000 corporations that are shipping jobs overseas at a record rate and then redistribute that money to the middle class, the small businesses, as the law, you know, provides, is just extremely difficult because they're so powerful and they've got so much money to lobby Congress. But we're working on it, and we're making progress every day. And I hope
poco a poco, I guess, little by little, you've got a heck of a record, Lloyd.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I really like harassing the government. I'll tell you something. People are afraid of the government, and there's no reason to be afraid of the government. In fact, to tell you the truth, what did Thomas Jefferson say? He said, when the people fear the government, you have tyranny. And the government fears the people, you have liberty.
Yes.
And I think we all need to work together and make the government afraid of us. And I love these protests.
And,
love to see these protests around the country.
Right.
People should get involved in that.
Your website is a good place to direct people's attention if they want to get on board and help with your work. And that's ASBL.com, very simple, and that stands for American Small Business League, ASBL.com. So if you're a small business owner, this is a great place to go. Lloyd Chapman is absolutely working on your behalf. We could call you a lobbyist for the American Small Business, could we not?
Absolutely. In fact, here's something else that will shock you. When you look across the country at all the organizations that claim to represent small businesses, they're all funded by Fortune 1000 companies. So as
Whoa.
Far as I know, I've been doing this for 20 years. And
that's true.
So let's just, you know,
we got the wolf. We got the wolf
it,
watching the hen house, huh?
Absolutely. And here's something else that will shock people. The Small Business Administration. People think the Small Business Administration is there to help small businesses. Nothing could be further from the truth. The Small Business Administration is a federal agency, and they're there to help the federal government. In fact, every policy that was ever adopted that allows companies like Lockheed and Boeing and Northrop and Dell and Hewlett-Packard to get billions a year in federal small business contracts were all adopted through the Small Business Administration. And so the SBA is not what people think it is. And I'm hoping that at some point in time we can clean house at the SBA and get some people in there that care about small businesses and realize that small businesses are the engine for economic growth in America.
Right.
And we are
when we're talking about small businesses, what would be a good definition from your perspective of a small business?
Well, 98% of all U.S. firms have less than 100 employees. 89%
have, okay, okay.
Mm-hmm, and 89% have less than 20, and the average American company has about 10 employees. So
yeah.
I don't think you could have a definition of over 100, you know, and be appropriate. But the federal government allows literally Fortune 500 firms. I issued a press release about 10 days ago. There's a company in Rome called Finmeccanica, and they have, 75,000 employees around the world, $30 billion in assets, and they're getting about $250 million a year in U.S. government small business contracts.
Oh, my gosh.
It's disgusting.
Yes.
Yeah.
And those jobs, we need those jobs in this country.
Yep. In fact, here's the other thing that's just shocking to me is I can't think of the guy's name, but it's the president of General Electric, and he's head of President Obama's Jobs Commission. Well, General Electric is moving major parts of their company to China, and I think that no company in America has shipped more jobs overseas than General Electric. And this guy is head of the president's jobs council. It's just you can't make this stuff up. It's just it's crazy. In fact,
it's horrifying.
Oh,
it's horrifying.
It's unbelievable.
And
that's the type of thing that you see. You know, the last guy on the planet that should be chairman of the jobs council is the president of the company that has shipped more jobs overseas than anybody else in the country. And yet that's what we have with the Obama administration. It's just stunning.
I find that utterly horrifying. You say also in the you said that by law the federal government is obligated to award a fair portion, in quotes, currently 23% of its contracts to small businesses. That said, a series of federal investigations and private studies have found that the government is reporting billions of dollars in contracts to large companies as federal small business awards. That is corruption and dishonesty.
You know what? It is corruption. And to tell you the truth, I think our whole government's corrupt, quite frankly. I really do. I think it's corrupt from one end to the other. When you look at the congressional committees, let's just say, how about the House Small Business Committee? The biggest contributors to the House Small Business Committee are Fortune 500 firms. Coincidentally, the very Fortune 500 firms that are getting these federal small business contracts. But the easiest way to turn our economy around is for the government to just quit giving small business contracts to Fortune 500 firms. It's real simple. President Obama said he would do it, and my bill will stop that. Federal law defines a small business as being independently owned. And my attorney said that means many things, but the most basic thing independently owned means is not publicly traded. So my bill has one sentence in it that says the federal government will no longer report awards to publicly traded companies as small business awards. And President Obama could issue an executive order like that on Monday, or they can pass this bill. It's a short bill. It's about 5 or 6 pages long. And that would do more to rescue our economy than anything that they're looking at. But
Lloyd, what's really ingenious about what you're saying and right on is that if we help the really legitimate small businesses, that money go directly into the economy, doesn't it, quickly?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that would set up spending and also the multiplier effect. It would create there's part-time employees that could be hired. There's inventory that could be replenished. And that money will go directly into the economy, and it can help pull us out of this recession, if not depression.
George, that's absolutely true. It's a real simple way to create jobs.
That's why we're here working with you on it. We thank you for being with us, and we'll be right back after the break and continue our discussion. Thank you very much. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Bunker, along with
Charlotte Littlefield. Welcome back, Lloyd Chapman, American Small Business League, at ASBL.com. Where can I find a copy of that legislation you were speaking of?
The Fairness and Transparency Contracting Act. It's on our website.
Is
also,
that
Congressman
2568?
Hank Johnson has it, but it's on our website, I believe. It just was reintroduced on Thursday.
Pardon me?
I apologize. I keep talking over you. Was that H.R. 2568, is that right? The Fairness and Transparency in Contracting Act, Help Us End Fraud and Abuse in Small Business Contracting, Learn More? Well, I would encourage everybody in the listening audience to go to the website, ASBL, click on that, and let's start sharing this on Facebook, and let's get this going viral.
That would be fantastic.
It's very simple. You've written it quite well. It's, what, 2 pages?
It's a sin, Lloyd, to write a bill with only 5 pages these days, isn't it?
Huh? I'll tell you something funny. I actually wrote the original draft of the bill on a little tablet next to the phone at the DoubleTree Hotel in Durango, Colorado.
Yeah, I did.
It was about maybe 4 or 5 of those pages. But the essence of the bill is actually one sentence. The essence of the bill is the federal government will no longer report awards to publicly traded companies as small business awards. And quite frankly, it was just that one sentence. But as it went through the hands of different people in Congress that were helping me write it, they added, you know, some things into it to improve it. But the essence of it is that one sentence. In fact, my little fantasy was to have the shortest bill in U.S. history and just have one sentence, you know, but you've got to put all this legal stuff in there, and it ended up being, you know, much longer.
Right.
Well,
you know,
simplicity is very important. I'm not saying that correctly, but the character, the integrity, if it can be said in the simple, direct, and encompass all that it needs to, then that's enough words.
Absolutely. My goal was to try to make it where no one in Congress could object to it. You know, I wanted it real clean, so. Because I knew they were to try to not pass it. In fact, it was actually the House Small Business Committee that I talked about previously that's dominated by contributions from these big defense contractors would never even look at the bill. So this is the second time it's been introduced. We've been lobbying now. I guess I'm in my fourth year, I guess, of trying to get this bill passed. But it's so frustrating. I'll tell you a story. I asked a 7-year-old child this question. A friend of mine's son was over here the other day, and he's a bright kid. And I said, if you knew that small businesses created 100% of all the new jobs in America, how much of the stimulus money would you give small businesses if you're trying to create jobs? And he thought about it about 2 seconds. He said, 100%. So a 7-year-old kid can figure it out. But President Obama and Bernanke in Congress can't figure it out. They've given 97% of the stimulus money, which I guess I'm losing track now. It's like $3 trillion to big businesses that haven't created one net new job in 30 years. It's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. But, you know, they've got the money, they've got the power, and that's who you have to fight when you go up there.
Well,
what about
the protests on Wall Street? This would be powerful information to get into the protesters' hands down on Occupy Wall Street. Maybe you could put some flyers out there and spread the word, because this is the crux of the matter. And I think the large part, my guess is the large population of the protesters have no idea about your efforts and how righteous this your effort is.
Yeah, in fact, it's shocking to me how when I talk to a journalist or a member of Congress, whoever I'm talking to, when you tell them that the U.S. Census Bureau says that small businesses create over 90% of the net new jobs, they're always shocked. It's amazing. They're always stunned. And again, conversely, you know, that means that the large businesses aren't creating any new jobs. But the protest group on Wall Street called us last week, actually, and we were talking to them. In fact, I was tempted to fly up there myself with a bullhorn, actually, and join them.
Well, you should.
Lord, you should do it.
I would do more than a bullhorn. I would bring.
We need people like you to be at those kind of venues.
I'd bring 20,000 copies of your legislation, and I would pass it out.
Yep, I might do that. What happens to me is So since the bills were introduced, I'm working 12 hours a day on the phone, calling
right.
members of Congress, you know, lobbying on the phone to try to get the bill passed. And so it kind of keeps me stuck in my office. And we're also...
Maybe we can get some help from Luke Rakowski for you up there, someone like that.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic.
I think we'll go link y'all together on that and get some flyers out on the street there or something, at least to those leaders down there. They need this information.
Well, just think how crazy it is that we're in the worst economic downturn in 80 years. It looks like the economy is getting worse and worse to me. And the federal government is giving small business contracts to a company in Italy with 75,000 employees.
Right.
That's just insane.
Yeah, the same thing occurs here in Austin when these city council here gives contracts to companies outside the city. See what I mean? We need to
yeah.
to favor somewhat some of our local businesses here in Austin.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, I lived in Austin for a long time, and
right.
The city of Austin shouldn't be giving contracts to businesses outside the city. If there's anything that a business inside the city of Austin can provide the city, they should buy it from those people.
They'll give a $100,000 research grant or contract to someone in Colorado or something. See what I mean? We've got all the research brains in the world here, UT and everything.
Absolutely. I'll tell you why they do that. I've run into this before. People in government like to travel around the country, like to fly around
yes.
the country. And so they'll give a contract to somebody outside of state so they can, fly to that destination for a meeting on Friday. And then they'll spend the week in there, and have fun. But I see that all the time, quite frankly, in California and different places where they're doing a lot of business outside the state and outside the city. And they're just sort of taking advantage of their position, I think. It's not good for the city or the state.
Michael Moore's ought to be talking about this bill that you're presenting and you've been fighting to get through, Instead of destroying capitalism and all that, the focus is wrong. These people have been conditioned for decades to the wrong ideas.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Do you think that the government monitors anybody's cell phones in America?
Yes.
Well, yeah, you bet.
You think they do?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. If you've got 15 lawsuits against the government, you think that might monitor your cell phone?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Lori,
when I was 19 years old, I went into the Army Security Agency in Europe.
Yep.
And so I got a real good schooling, though. We reported daily to the National Security Agency, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was 19, 20 years old, I was all into this. I mean, we didn't have cell phones in, but we were intercepting business traffic out of Europe going into Wall Street at Menwith Hill there in England. So I got a pretty early on schooling about how we can intercept all these communications and how corrupt it can become.
Absolutely. What happens to me is in the last 60 days, I think I've had 4 or 5 national television appearances canceled. And what happens is the government, this might sound kind of paranoid to some people, but how do they know that I'm going to be on that show? How do they know to call, those guys and tell them, oh, Lloyd Chapman, don't have him on your show? But,
man, I don't know. Hey, we've got to take a break here, and we'll be right back. But we're not going to give in to that, that's for sure. Thanks for being with us. We'll be right back for our final segment. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and a warm welcome back to Lloyd Chapman, founder of American Small Business League. That's ASBL.com. Since we've been on break, I have posted it to 5 friends on Facebook, asking them to spread this information. I put the link directly to the legislation, and I asked them to explore your website.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. We need to get people behind this bill. I think if this bill were to pass, it would create millions of jobs, put a lot of people back to work, and turn people that are currently, you know, unemployed into taxpayers, which would help the government, you would think. But we're going to push real hard to try to get it passed.
Have you had any feedback from Ron Paul on this?
No, I haven't. And I've got guys in my office, you know, that make a lot of the phone calls, but I would sure love to talk to him about it. And I'll tell you, I got a lot of statistics in my head, but I believe that Texas is losing about $2 billion a year in federal small business contracts. And if we can get the government to quit giving small business contracts to these Fortune 500 firms, that's about $2 billion a year in additional government contracts would go into the state of Texas, and that's going to create a lot of jobs and cut the unemployment rate in Texas. So Ron Paul should be behind this bill. And quite frankly, what's not to like about this bill? All the bill says is quit giving small business contracts to Fortune 500 firms. And let's just say if we were to do a survey of everybody in the country and say, do you agree with Lloyd Chapman that Fortune 500 firms shouldn't get small business contracts? What percentage of the people would agree with me? I would say probably 99%. So this bill should have been passed, you know, 4 years ago. But again, this is Washington, and we're talking about politics. We're talking about a lot of money from Fortune 500 firms, and they don't want to turn loose of that money. They want to keep it. The big businesses want every dime the government spends, and quite frankly, they're trying to end all federal programs for women, minorities, small business, and veterans. But we're going to try to stop them.
Yeah, I've been able to post it to two Occupy. One was Occupy this city. Another was Occupy that city. The ones for the Occupy Wall Street, they're locked groups. But we're going to post them to all the Occupy groups that we can find while we're on the air tonight.
That's fantastic, Charlotte. That's fantastic.
Well, that is great, Charlotte. You know, there's so many different factions that are part of this Occupy Wall Street, aren't there, Lloyd?
Absolutely. There's all types of groups. I saw a group the other day of angry mothers were down there protesting.
Okay. But, maybe they can bang on some pots and pans or something.
Really? Well, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people in the media claim that the supposed Occupy Wall Street had no single message. That's because every single person attending has a different grievance, and they view it from a different perspective. And I thought it was quite disingenuous of the media to portray the protesters, who have every right under our constitutional republic to free speech and free assembly, and to ridicule them in that manner was just it's an embarrassment. It reflects poorly on the media.
Well, you have to realize that the media is the big corporations, right? That's who runs ads on all the major television networks, are the large, you know, businesses, and those are their customers. So. But,
Do you remember that movie, Network? Was it called Network?
You know, I was just thinking about that, George.
And the women and stuff were beating on pots and pans and saying, we're not going to take it anymore.
Absolutely. We need everybody in the country doing that. We need everybody in the country to fill out in the streets and let these politicians know we're not going to take this corruption and get these crooks out of Washington. And I tell you what, I think we're making an impression on them. And I hope more people get involved in these protests and make more noise, because Congress doesn't seem to be hearing what we're saying. And, you know, I love Thomas Jefferson. And, of course, he said that all tyranny needs to gain a foothold is for people of good conscience to remain silent. So people out there in America need to make noise. You can call your congressman, call your senator, call the media in your town, and send emails to your congressman. Let them know you're not happy with this stuff. And I'm very concerned about the future of our economy. Nothing they're doing is going to work. I think there are 6 Nobel Prize-winning economists in America, and they all agree on one thing, that tax cuts don't create jobs. So tax cuts, you know, are great for a lot of other things, but they don't create jobs. And President Obama's jobs bill is going to increase the deficit and not going to create any jobs. But I think that Congress is not going to pass his bill. I think he's just wasting his time with that, quite frankly. But we'll have to just wait and see.
Well, we've got to try and do what's right. And And the American public can see how I believe the validity of this bill that you're supporting.
Absolutely. It's very simple.
It is. It's very simple. And to get the money directly into the economy as quick as you can get it in to the economy and start spending again into the consumer's pocketbook.
Absolutely. What's great about this bill, George, is it's based on existing federal law, the Small Business Act. It's based on an existing system. Every federal agency has a small business liaison. Every government contractor has a small business liaison. The law says 23% of the money should go to small businesses. There's penalties for noncompliance. There's a whole network of reporting. So that whole system is in place. So we're talking about, if my bill passes, we're talking about no new taxes, no new spending, deficit neutral, and we'll put more money into the middle class than anything that anyone's ever proposed. I think it's going to be around $200 billion a year that would go back into the middle class. And when you look at the kind of things that President Obama is talking about, that is 10 times larger than anything he's even spoken of. But he promised he would do this when he was campaigning, when he said it's time to end the diversion of federal small business contracts to corporate giants, so he should get behind this bill.
Right,
well,
we need to call him out on that, big time.
I just posted it to Ron Paul's profile, his personal profile on Facebook. It has been posted.
I've been doing some lobbying effort on the back channel with Ron Paul and them. I haven't gotten much feedback yet. Ron Paul has a tendency to be like Von Mises and of that nature and not, stimulative or government spending type of view. See what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
But in this, the argument is that this is a policy change and actually forcing the Small Business Administration to do what their mission is set out to, by laws, is set out to be anyway.
Absolutely. It's real simple.
Hey,
the small business was established by Congress to help small businesses, and they're helping big businesses. And again, this is not Lloyd Chapman saying this. There's been 21 federal investigations, 21, that have all found that these large corporations are getting small business contracts. I think as Senator Claire McCaskill had a hearing about in June that found the same thing, and all these investigations have found that these large corporations are getting the money, and it needs to stop. And the Small Business Administration is a very small agency. And when you realize there's 28 million small businesses, they employ half the private sector workforce, they're responsible for half of the gross domestic product, 90% of all U.S. exports, and over 90% of jobs, that agency's budget should be 10 times what it is. But
I describe it as supercharging the Small Business Administration programs for small businesses.
Absolutely.
But the problem with this, Lloyd, is that the banks are trying to hoard cash, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So because they see this Europe's own thing cascading over into America. So your largest banks are hoarding cash and getting ready for this big problem of financial debacle that is just imminent, maybe set off by the European zone shutdown and bankruptcy of many of their largest banks over there.
Absolutely.
To cascade over here. So they've been hoarding cash and they've cut way back on small business lending. That's a problem.
Absolutely. In fact, I remember seeing every politician in the country on national television saying that we need to pass TARP to increase access to capital for small businesses. And after TARP passed, the research came out and showed that the access to capital for small businesses plummeted after that was passed.
Yeah. Charlotte and I and another man, Jim Ponick, went up to Virginia at George Mason, and we were going to tell them the truth about the Bretton Woods one and all this money creation out of thin air, and we didn't have one person that showed up at our speech there.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yep, it's sad. People are afraid, George. People are afraid of the government.
The thing has changed. But thank you very much for the interview this evening, and thank you for all the marvelous and hard work you've done, Lloyd, over the years in this area.
Well, George, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I'm going to keep doing it. I'm going to keep fighting the government. I've got 15 more lawsuits I'm going to file between now and the end of the year, so that should make President Obama happy.
Okay, thank you very much. Good night.